you spend £200 million. I'm Sorrel, and I'm back for season two of the insanely lavish Rich Beyond My Wildest Dreams podcast, where hilarious guests get their hands on an imaginary £200 million jackpot on Euro Millions from the National Lottery.
I would buy tickets to go and see Backstreet Boys in the Sphere. I'd buy the Sphere? What are we talking about?
The bougier, the better.
Turned into a lunatic with all this money. Europe. Beach.
So get ready for confetti cannons, champagne, giant checks, and some of the most outrageous ways a person could possibly spend a £200 million fortune.
Jacuzzi karaoke.
Jacuzzi
karaoke.
You can get that Euro Millions feeling every Friday by searching for Rich Beyond My Wildest Dreams on all podcasting apps, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.
Afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here today. Of course, Tim is here. I'm here. How you doing, Tim?
Yeah, I'm really good. Yeah, how are you?
I'm doing great. Wow, you sound enthusiastic. I'm really good. Way to sell it. Are you sad? What's going on?
No, I'm great. Yeah, this is take two. We had some mic issues the first time. I was just saying I've been watching a lot of hockey. I'm watching that show, The Last of Us, on HBO Max, which is really good. Season two is going on right now. We are getting ready for Julia's parents to come visit for a long weekend, Friday through Monday. So that'll be nice, and just enjoying the weather. It's been good. How are
that
you?
That is nice. Yeah, I like Julia's parents. I met them in Grand Rapids. Nice couple. Right. The in-laws are very nice. Very good choice there. I'm doing good. Lots of hockey. It's fun. Every single night, there's compelling games. And it's so funny. This playoffs, I don't remember games that have drastically changed so quickly night to night, where I'll be watching a game, or I'll be following another game, or I'll be doing something with the kids and checking in on a game. I'm like, oh, this one's over. 3 minutes left. This team's up. Boom, I come back. The other team's up by two. I'm just like, how the hell is this happening? It's every single series, every single night. There are comebacks, there are upsets, there are just teams choking in crunch time. When in the playoffs, that's when you buckle down. So there's lots to talk about, lots to get into, but no, I'm doing fine. Thank you for asking. We're not in the house yet. The chickens are doing fine. The kids are doing great. Everybody's happy and healthy. I need to get a new car because of the van. I'm going to trade it in this week. So I've decided to get rid of it and get a new vehicle. What I'm going to get is, I don't know. My thought process is just to get a beater for the next couple of years and just beat the crap out of it and then get something nicer when the kids are old enough to drive and try to figure something out then. So we'll see. Now, lots of moving parts, Tim. You don't know. All you do is get hit by cars. By the way, did you see in our Slack channel? Someone in our Slack channel got hit. I think John from Dallas got buried by a car. So it's an epidemic. I think people are on their phones too much driving and just not paying attention. What are your thoughts, Tim?
Yeah, I used to work at an insurance company when I was in Boston. And this is 10 years ago, distracted driving had already passed drunk driving as the number one cause of accidents.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, and by a lot. Now, and that was 10 years ago. Now it's, drastically higher. So yeah, you're totally right. If you just I do this sometimes when I'm watching the dog. If you just sort of pay attention to cars going by, you can count one out of three, two out of three, so many people just aren't looking what they're driving at. It's crazy.
Yeah, my office is right along the road here and everybody just staring at the phone. It's pretty, when are they going to come up with an invention that the car won't start? It's like for the DUIs when you got to blow to start the car. There's a little bubble around the driver's seat where you can't have any technology or any 5G or something. I look at my phone when I drive. Who am I to talk? But my kids keep me in check. They're like, can't do that. So when the kids are in the car, I'm focused. When the kids aren't there, I'm a menace to society. All right. Moving on, speaking of hockey, teams are facing elimination, and it's funny how parity works and just being symmetrical. In the West, there was a time when all four series were tied 2-2, 2-2, 2-2, 2-2. In the East, all the series were 3-1. When series are 3-1, that means teams are up for elimination. and you never corner an animal the same. That's when they're the most dangerous. And so what we're going to talk about today to start off the show, we got a lot to talk about just because we do two shows a week and we got lots of hockey to cover. We're going to talk about why are these teams facing elimination and what players maybe have to look in the mirror and say, I'm not doing enough. And it's not the ho-hum. It's superstars that need to step up their game and drag their teams out of these 3-1 holes and 3-2 holes now that Dallas leads Colorado 3-2 after they lost last night. So who are we going to start with, Tim? The Battle of Ontario, maybe?
Yeah, let's do that. And this is the team, the Ottawa Senators. They were down 3-0, actually, at one point. They came back. They have a great showing in game 4, an overtime win. But we're going to talk about, really, there's a couple guys on my list, but the number one, and this is obvious, who needs to be better is Linus Ullmark. 3.5 goals against he's allowing each game, .848 save percentage. That's nowhere near good enough. And someone I saw on Twitter said before his win in game 4, he was on something like an 0-7 or 0-8 streak in the playoffs going back 2.5 seasons. So it's like, this is a guy that just needs to be better. And we're going to compare that to someone else, you know, the elephant in the room when it comes to disappointing goalies so far. But yeah, I think that's the number one to me when I look at the Senators team. There's a couple others we'll talk about, but let's start there.
Well, he's been bad, you know, and the Toronto Maple Leafs, obviously the first game, they put up 6 and then the doubts start to creep in if you're Linus Ullmark. But I think after that game, he hasn't been terrible. You lose 3-2 in overtime the next 2 games. So you're facing a Toronto Maple Leafs team that's high octane offense. So for the most part, I don't think he's been terrible. My issue with the Ottawa Senators is they just haven't scored 10. None of the guys have any kind of jam. They have no points. Their highest goal total in the game was 4. And that's last game when they won 4-3 in overtime. So the key for me is get these guys some goals. Give Linus Ullmark some goal support. And yes, he's let in some questionable goals. But as a whole, when your leading goal scorer has 3 points in 4 games, that's not good enough. Maybe if you're playing a team like the New Jersey Devils or the Carolina Hurricanes, where it's a defensive-minded chess match, you're playing the Toronto Maple Leafs. This team will score. They'll put up points in the power play. You need to get 3 or 4 goals a game if you're expected to win. And it's played out like expected. You score 2 goals, you lose. You score more than 2 goals, you have a chance to win. So in my eyes, everybody needs to play better. Brady Kachuk, Claude Giroux, David Perron, even a Jake Sanderson who got the overtime winner last game. They all need to do more offensively to try to score. I think they, and we talked about this, Tim, before the series even started. Are they trying to impose themselves physically too much? That's not their game. When you look at how they play in the regular season, they were a fast team. They were a dynamic team. You had Giroux and Stützle and Batherson and Kachuk. Yeah, Kachuk did bring that aspect, but everybody else is just a really skilled team versus a team like Washington or a team like Florida. Really, it's a heavy team, and then that's how they play their game. They go to the net. They muck things up. They play along the walls. Ottawa is an east-west. Let's get going up and down the ice, and I feel like they've tried to drag this series into the gutter, and that's not their game. And it's showing on the scoreboard. They're not scoring any goals. So, yes, Linus Ullmark needs to be better. Their offense needs to be better, too, Tim. Anybody in particular that is standing out to you?
Well, you mentioned a couple. I mean, you only have one player with multiple goals, and that player is Brady Kachuk, and it's only 2. And that's, you know, like you said, through 4 games, it's not good enough. Tim Stützle, another guy I'm looking at, he had a great goal to open scoring in game 4, but he is kind of invisible offensively. And my question for you now is you have a 4-3 win in game 4 in overtime. Do you see this game 4 as the beginning of a pushback where it's way too early to talk about, you know, a reverse sweep in 7 games or anything? But do you think that's the beginning of a pushback to go win a couple to extend the series? Or do you think it's just the last breath of a cornered animal, that type of thing?
I don't know. When you look at Toronto, the doubts start to creep in. I think they're 1-12 in their last 13 elimination game opportunities in the last 7 or some years. So they're not exactly the epitome of like closing teams out. You know, when Vasilevsky gets into game 7, he's going to play fantastic. You know, some guys like Justin Williams, he's like Mr. Overtime game 7. They have that charisma. They have that confidence. Toronto is the opposite. You get them in a chance to eliminate a team and they just tense up. They freeze up. And this is a fact. They've done it for the last over a little less than a decade. So for me, if they don't close it out at home in game 5, it gets a little tricky. Because then you go back to Ottawa and we all know how this story ends. So I don't think Toronto's panicking just yet, but the doubts start to creep in. It's not a huge roster turnover for this team from year to year to year. It's the same core group of guys who play the most minutes, make the most money. So if you, I don't know. Yeah, the doubts definitely creep in. So I'm not going to say anything more than that. They should win next game to close the series out. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, I agree. So the next one here is another team that's down, sticking in Canada's in Montreal. And I think you have to be, I know they expect to win, they want to win, but I think objectively you have to be pretty happy with where they are right now. They had a win, they had an overtime loss. Game four was the first time that they were really blown out. That was a 5-2, and there was a point in that game they led that game 2-1.
Two empty netters, Tim. Yeah, so not even a blowout.
Right, 3 third period goals. So like, they've been right there all the time. So there's not really a whole lot you can look at. And I know some people want to talk about the refs. Even Marty St. Louis said after the game, he's like, I'm going to choose my words carefully, but it's very frustrating. If I'm looking at one person, and this is tough, and I people aren't going to like this, but I'm going to look at Nick Suzuki. And it's not really a knock on his performance so far. He has a couple of goals in the series. But I think when you're facing elimination, when you're the underdog against a better team, it's on your captain and probably your best all-around player to step up. And he's very capable of doing it. So if they're going to come back and make this series, you know, 5, 6, 7 games, I'm going to count on him to do that.
Well, you look to the people who have the biggest responsibility and the guys who play the most minutes. And so far, I think Lane Hudson's played very well. I think Cole Caulfield's been playing really, really good. Slakovsky's had moments where he's looked really solid. And then Nick Suzuki, all in all, with the amount of responsibilities and the C on his chest, yeah. I think blame falls to him, and that's what happens when you're the captain in Montreal. But I want to disagree with you. I hate to do it because I know this could just derail the rest of the show because you're very fragile. I feel like Montreal should be tied in this series or up 3-1. They've been arguably the better team, and much like the Ottawa Senators, I feel like they're being dragged into this series to playing Washington's style of game. They should have won last game. They were up 2-1 going into the third period. Then all of a sudden, Tom Wilson just buries Carrier. And then they just start thinking about getting retribution, getting payback. Then Anderson's involved and Jack Eye's involved. And you saw it in game 3 when they had the big pushback and the bench brawl and everything. And everybody was so happy about that. That's what Washington likes to do. They got Duhamie. They got Wilson. They got Ovechkin. They have some physical players. And when you look at the Canadiens roster, and how they probably want to play the game, do you really want to get in this drag-out, knockdown physical game when you have Caulfield, Suzuki, Slakovsky, Gallagher, Evans, Demidov, Heinemann, Kapanen? Like, I can go on and on about the size of these guys, and on your back end, there's no one other than Arbor Jack Eye who is any type of physical. So I just feel like they've been tricked, and they've just been led down this path of just, we need to hit. We need to get retribution. We need to get payback for Caulfield getting laid out, Carrier getting laid out, all these guys. And it's just, it's not their game. Because when you look at this team, even though Montembeault has been out, Dobish has been playing great. The defense has been playing okay. The offense has been playing good. They should be better. I feel like last game got away from them. Game 3 was all about just fighting, and they got the W there. Game 1, they should have won in overtime, but I don't know. In my eyes, Dylan Strome, Tom Wilson have been the difference makers in this series. Ovi's been somewhat invisible, but Strome's got, 7 points in 4 games? And Wilson, even though he's not contributing offensively, he's in everybody's heads. It's everybody wants him dead, and he loves it. He absolutely loves where he's at. So I think this series is over. As much as I'd like to say Montreal will come back and win a couple games and make it, you know, a competitive Game 7 series, I think Washington has them right where they want them. Protas is coming back based on reports from Washington's practice today. So they're going to get another great top 6 forward back in the lineup. And c'est la vie, as they say in Montreal. It's all over, baby. But it was a fun ride, Canadiens fans.
Yeah, that's a good summary, and you're right. It's not their game, and not only is it not their game, but they're matched up against a team that is probably as well suited, if not the best suited team, to play that game right now in the Washington Capitals for all those reasons you mentioned. So, yeah, they've always been punching upward, literally and metaphorically in this series since the beginning. And I think I get your point about them, how close it was, and it could be 3-1 the other way. But at the end of the day, you were a wild card team playing the first place team. much more experienced team. And being down 3-1, the way these games have gone, I feel like you've got to be okay with that if you're a Habs fan.
Something to build on, right? And we talked about this with other teams. Detroit wanting to get into the playoffs. Buffalo needing that experience. This will be good for them in the long run. But right now it stings because you look at this 3-1 series and you go, damn, gosh, we could be 3-1. Like an overtime bounce. Last game, we're up in the third period. They get four straight goals. It stings being a competitor. But in, you know, 2-4 years, they look back and they go, yeah, we needed that. Get kicked in the teeth, not playing our game. It'll be good for us. But yeah, not fun right now. All right, moving on. New Jersey Devils, Tim. Down 3-1 to the Carolina Hurricanes. What can you say for a team that's just been beat up all season long? It was Markstrom. It was Dougie. It was Jack Hughes. Now everybody on the back end is hurt. Luke Hughes is out. Siegenthaler's been out. Brendan Dillon's out. They've just been a revolving door of defensemen playing on the back end. Their power play is atrocious. Tim noted me earlier, they're 0-12 in the series, which ain't good. So what can we say about New Jersey Devils? Who do you pinpoint? Did everybody, Tim?
Yeah, it's everyone. It's everyone and no one. Because there's no one that you can look at and be like, oh, this player in particular needs to be better. And they're missing their best player in Jack Hughes. And, you know, that was always going to be a problem. So, yeah, I mean, Jacob Markstrom's been really good, even though he's not getting the wins, obviously. He's been one of the better goalies in the playoffs so far. And especially you consider the team around him, you have to think that he's got to be frustrated. So, yeah, I there's not one person I'm looking at. This is a series that I think we thought was going to be relatively boring, and it's kind of turned out that way. And you have to give a lot of credit, of course, to Carolina and the way they're playing. But the Devils, there's no one to point your finger at. It's the whole team, and this is going to be over quick, I think.
I think maybe the first line, you could maybe start to throw some stones at. You got Brad Hirschire, Timo Meier, those types of guys. But I don't know. Carolina just plays such a solid team game. They're overwhelming. They throw a ton of pucks at your net, and they don't let you come up for air. They're a very just suffocating team to play against. So they gave it a good shot, the Devils. They won a game that was fun, but I firmly believe that's it. And then to add insult to injury, Freddie Anderson has been playing terrific, like lights out hockey. And he obviously got hurt, so I don't know his status, but he's been playing very, very good. Markstrom's been good. Anderson's been great. So I don't know if Kochetkov or Anderson is going to get the net for game five, but if Anderson's in there, that's tough to go up against Freddie Anderson, who's just on top of his game. Now, a question, a strange one here, Tim. I would have never guessed that this guy was next on the list, but when you look back at his recent playoff history, no bueno for this guy.
Yeah, the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I'm a little bit nervous because we're going to talk about Colorado too in a minute, and these are the two teams that I predicted to be in the finals. And now they're both on the cusp of elimination in round one. Obviously, two very good teams that are still very much in this series. But Tampa being down 3-1, and that's probably who you were talking about earlier when you went away from your TV for 5 minutes, and all of a sudden it's Florida's winning. So they scored two goals in 11 seconds. You can see Cooper just going nuts on the bench. And then later in the third, Panthers do it right back to him. So I think the player you have to look at, and again, this is a guy that – I don't know, I go back and forth on, but Andrei Vasilevskiy, his three-year run in the playoffs over the last three seasons, his goals, so his save percentage is .875, .897, .884. That is just not good enough. It is not what you expect and not what you pay him for. And so you're getting great contributions from Jake Gensel, for example, a friend of the show, is playing lights out. Kucherov has been awesome. You're not getting much from the depth players. You're not getting a whole lot from the back end. So there's a couple guys you're looking at and say, I love more from Hedman. I'd love more from Braden Point. But Vasilevskiy is a huge problem right now. And the other half of this problem is the power play. They're 1-15. Like, it's really strange from a John Cooper coach Tampa Bay stacked roster to go 1-15 in the power play. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, but ton of credit to Florida, obviously, on that.
Yeah, again, you would think with the guy as creative and good as Kucherov, they would be better. But I think it is Florida Panthers. They're just a stifling penalty kill. It's hard to break through that wall when you're buying in to block shots. When they get a chance to clear, they clear it. They're fundamentally sound. And when you can roll out a penalty killing duo of Ekblad and Forsling, and then their second unit is Mikkola and Kulikov, and though, by the way, you got Seth Jones backing those four guys up, that's really difficult. And then you got Lundell and Luostarinen, who have just been paired together, I think, since birth. Killing penalty. So they're comfortable together. They know what they're doing. They know when to pressure. They know when not to pressure. So it's just been a clinic on the penalty kill. But just overall, the Tampa Bay Lightning, I feel like they're going in spats of just uninterested hockey. And I don't know why that is. And it just seems like as a team that won the cup a few years ago and have bounced from the playoffs early the last few years, why aren't you interested? Why is there no fire there? The Florida Panthers win the Stanley Cup last year in Game 7. They should have the hangover. I feel like Florida has the urgency. Florida has the passion. Florida has that drive to go and get number two. There are instances where there's pushback, but it's not sustained. And I'm waiting for that sustained effort. And it just doesn't seem to happen. I don't know. And yeah, this series is dirty. There's some hatred there. And maybe that does play in the Florida Panthers kind of resume, because much like the other series, if you were going to pick a team who would want to drag this game into the gutter, it's the Florida Panthers. And there's been a plethora of questionable hits in this series. Like a lot. The Hagel, the Tkachuk, the Ekblad, the Mikkola. There's been a lot of hits that have towed that line and crossed that line. Obviously, Hagel gets suspended in game one. Mikkola gets fined this game. They're going to have a hearing for Ekblad for his forearm shiver on Hagel. So there's a lot of just animosity there. And Tim, I know I sound like a broken record. That favors the Florida Panthers. That's right in their wheelhouse. When you got Bennett and Tkachuk and Marchand and the nasty boys on the back end, because Mikkola's a prick. He's hard to play against. So it's just teed up for them to have a nasty series. And Tampa Bay, that's not their style. That's not their style at all. Even though they have some greasy players, this is Florida's series. They want to play it along the boards. They want to go to the net. They want to have scrums after the whistle. And it's shown in the results. 3-1. Florida's got the stranglehold on this series.
Yeah, I can't believe it. And I really thought, like you mentioned, this is part of my prediction before the playoffs started, was that Tampa now has had a couple of early exits. They're rested. Their roster looks good, the pieces that they've added. And you have Florida that just has, you know, two Stanley Cup finals in a row and all this stuff. And you think, okay, they've got to be a little burnt out. But no, they look hungrier. You're exactly right. And then the whole physicality thing, like both teams have towed that line for years. And Tampa's had a lot of, like, you know, rat type players, including Hagel. And I like the guy. But
and Kucherov.
Yeah. Oh, don't get me started. But John Cooper said last night, he said, it's quote, getting tiresome, answering questions about a hit every single game. And you know that, like, the Florida Panthers hear that. They're like, oh, yeah.
Jackpot.
Oh, yeah, baby. They're rubbing their hands together. This is exactly what they want. And of course, they don't want to hurt people or whatever, but they want you just questioning and looking over your shoulder every time you get the puck, knowing that at a minimum, you're going to get hit. At a max, someone else might cross the line and they'll pay the price for it if there's a fine or a suspension, but they're willing to pay that price because it's so effective. So, and then you didn't even mention Brad Marchand, by the way, in terms of the penalty kill, the physicality, great play in the corner to set up. I forget, it was a Luostarinen's goal, one of those guys. So yeah.
Lundell, I think. Yeah.
Lundell. Yeah. They're great. They're so good.
So you mentioned not trying to hurt somebody. Mikkola, that was, you know, I know Gergensen. He could, like, Tim.
In the heat of the moment, sure, but I don't think they're like, hey, you know what? If we can send someone home on crutches tonight, we've done our job. It's not the outcome that they're seeking. It's more just
true. But I don't think you premeditate anything. But when you have the option of not full on burying somebody's head into the boards with your whole body, you know, you have a second to think about that. And he went for it, man. So he got a $5,000 fine.
Yeah.
Like, what the... It boggles my mind. Didn't Kadri do this a few years back in the playoffs and he got dinged for like 3 games?
He did.
How would you spend £200 million? I'm Sorrel and I'm back for season 2 of the insanely lavish Rich Beyond My Wildest Dreams podcast, where hilarious guests get their hands on an imaginary £200 million jackpot on Euro Millions from the National Lottery.
I would buy tickets to go and see Backstreet Boys in the Sphere. I'd buy the Sphere? What are we talking about?
The bougier, the better.
Turned into a lunatic with all this money.
Flat by Europe. Beach. So get ready for confetti cannons, champagne, giant checks, and some of the most outrageous ways a person could possibly spend a £200 million fortune.
Jacuzzi karaoke.
Jacuzzi
karaoke.
You can get that Euro Millions feeling every Friday by searching for Rich Beyond My Wildest Dreams on all podcasting apps, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.
And now this makes me wonder too, like, what does the rest of the series look like? Because all the examples they sent in the Montreal-Washington series of, like, the pregame chatter and shooting pucks and the scuffles and the hits, and they were, like, finding these guys and warnings from the league before the game. And it's like turning a blind eye to this one. I get there's been some fines and stuff, but there's been way more egregious hits and plays in this series than the other one. And I feel like the longer it goes on, there's so much hatred and animosity. And if Tampa's down 3-0 in the second period, they're about to get eliminated, this can get real ugly because then they have nothing left to play for.
Yeah, I hope it does. It's fun. It's fun hockey. Hopefully no one gets hurt, but man, I love watching it. The Ekblad hit was fantastic. Just a forearm shiver. Like, it really was. Poor Hagel. His head bounced off the ice. Like, it was scary. But yeah, it's been a hell of a series. Very, very fun. All right, moving on to the last team that's facing elimination, the Dallas Stars and the Colorado Avalanche played a great game last night. Dallas comes out on top. That means Colorado is losing 3-2. They're going back to Colorado. I think they play in a couple days. The blame, Tim, I'm putting right on Cale Makar. Right on his chest. He deserves it. He plays the most minutes, I think, of anybody in the league, 26 minutes per game plus. He gets grade A chances all the time. I'm not saying he's not trying hard. I'm not saying he's not playing hard enough. He's buzzing around the ice like a water bug. The guy is an amazing player to watch. You know how many points he's got 5-on-5? 0. You know how many points he's got on the power play? 2 assists, secondary assists. He's -3. He needs to do more. He needs to score. That's it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. When you're seeing goals by Eric Chernak, scored by the Tampa Bay Lightning, and other defensemen around the league who are jumping in the rush and scoring goals, and Cale Makar has 0 over 5 games, not good enough. Not nearly good enough from a guy of his caliber. Like, he could be the Hart Trophy winner every single year, and he's got 0 points 5-on-5. And I don't think it's because of Dallas playing great. Well, it's because of the guy in net. Jake Oettinger has been very good. Very, very good. He makes me happy when I watch him play the game. He's so incredibly good. The coach felt so bad for him. I think it was game 2. They pulled him when they were down 4-0. He's like, it's not your fault. Just get some rest. We're going to lose this game. We need you for game 3. And they pulled him because he's so incredibly good. It might have been game 3. I can't remember what it was. But back to Cale Makar, Tim. He has to do better. He has to score. That's why you're there, to score. And he's not doing it. And they're losing. So way to go, Cale.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because almost always when a player's not performing well, the solution almost always is to simplify things. It's like, hey, you're trying to do too much. Go back to the things you do well. And if it's a defenseman, it's, you know, play the body, chip the puck out, make it pass, and just get your game back slowly. But there's a few exceptions to that, and Cale Makar is one of those guys. Like, he is at his best when he's impacting every inch of the play when he's on the ice. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with Quinn Hughes, prime Erik Karlsson, prime Brent Burns. Like, they need to buffle in. Like, they need to be just buzzing all the way around the ice to be at their best. And right now, they need that level from Cale Makar. So I think you're right. It's like, hey, we need more from you, if not less. And I'm just shocked that they got to this point because I thought Colorado was going to win this in 5. And now they're like, you have the infighting a little bit too. And I know this is just one clip and Nate's an intense guy, but he's screaming at Charlie Coyle on the bench after he didn't like how he was performing on the power play. So you have to wonder, like, where is this going? So I do think this still goes 7, and I will stay. I'll stick my neck out and say I still think Colorado wins this series, but it's closer, way closer than I thought it would be.
Well, and there's lots of blame to go around. Charlie Coyle has been terrible too. So, like, he's been pretty much invisible. Valley Nichushkin has been pretty much invisible. Brock Nelson is getting a lot of chances, but he's not scoring. I think Jake Oettinger is just shutting guys down. The list of guys who have no goals for this team is long. I think only 5 guys have scored for Colorado in this series. And they've played 5 games. McKinnon's got 5. O'Connor, Laikkanen, Taves, and Girard. Landeskog got one too. They need more from these guys. So it is what it is. Colorado can do better. But until you solve Jake Oettinger, until Cale Makar can get going, I don't see them winning this series. And Dallas, like, I know we're not touching on the other teams. They don't have Heiskanen. They don't have Robertson. When those two guys come back, because reports are they're getting closer. Ooh, when you just knocked off Colorado? Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Like, it's going to be a very intimidating team to play in round 2 if they get past Colorado. All right. We saw out east all the teams at 3-1. I want to quickly touch on the series out west because it's been parity at its finest. The home teams winning every game, and Winnipeg and St. Louis, it's been back and forth, and Winnipeg and Vegas, and then the home team has held court in LA and Edmonton, even though maybe some series should be over already. I just want to touch on those. Let's start with Minnesota-Vegas, Tim. Minnesota, I think in game four, a huge opportunity to put this series away and go up 3-1, and they blew. And then when you look at Vegas's goals, this is fluke, garbage goals, like bumbling, fluttering pucks that go into the net off of somebody. Not one of their goals, in my eyes, was merited. It was just a lucky game for the Vegas Golden Knights and Minnesota. They deserve to win that game. That's how I saw it. So now it's 2-2 going back to Vegas, and now it's anybody's. You got the Stanley Cup champion from a few years ago, the Minnesota Wild, who are just happy to be here, really, being in cap hell. But when you look at the four games, I feel like Minnesota's been the better team of three of them. They should be up 3-1. Who feels better now, Tim? What? It's the best of three. Which team do you think has the advantage?
I think it's Minnesota. I think they felt like they've been the better team from the jump. And I think they also, you know, coming into the series as I would relatively slighter underdogs, I think they've proven that they can compete with this team. And I mean, I was wrong about them for sure. So I'll go with Minnesota. But now you play two out of three in Vegas. How much does that factor in as well?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it is because Minnesota took game two in Vegas. I really don't think they have much of a home ice advantage. I just think Minnesota's playing great. Matt Boldy, he's having a come out year, Matt Boldy, with the Four Nations Cup and now is playing this playoffs, and everybody knows how good Kirill Kaprizov's been. And I'm telling you, that line with Marcus Foligno and Ryan Hartman, they've been very, very good. And Marco Rossi's been floating all over the lineup, making a difference everywhere. So I still think this is Minnesota's series. I didn't think so before the series started, but after watching four games, holy crap, I have changed my mind. They've been playing terrific, and Vegas, for whatever reason, it ain't there so far. There's time to change, but, you know, as much as, you know, there's death taxes, at least Mark Stone's still been the biggest jerk out there because he's just impossible. I just hate him. I don't know why. He's on my short list of guys, so I'm just like, I don't know why. It's Liam O'Brien, it's Tom Sestito, and it's Mark Stone. I just don't know why. He's just one of those guys. Anything else to touch on Mark Stone and how much you hate him, Tim?
No, haven't met the guy. I'm sure he's lovely, but no, nothing else on him.
All right, moving on. LA Edmonton, speaking of a series that should or could be over.
Yeah.
If it weren't for a untimed challenge and just a complete failure by the coach to just keep playing the same way. And this falls right on LA's coach, Jim Hiller. Game three, he challenges Evander Kane's goal after they tie it 4-4. Instead of punting and going to overtime or living to fight another day and watching Philip Deneau score 40 seconds later that they did in game one, he decides to challenge the call. And obviously Edmonton wins the challenge and they get a power play and they score on the power play. They'll go up 5-4 and they win the game going away. I think it was 7-4. Last game, you're up 3-1 in the third period. What the hell are we doing? You change the style of your play. Instead of attacking, throwing it behind their defensemen, getting them on their heels, making Bouchard and Nurse and Emberton and all the other crappy defensemen Edmonton has go 200 feet and make a pass. No, they just let them break out. And you let, oh, by the way, 97 is fast. You just let them go. And you just let them wind up and up and down the ice they go and they come back and they win the game. It's mind-boggling, the coaching decisions that he did. And he put in Quentin Byfield out there in the last minute of the game where he's not a defensive specialist. He's still a young kid. He's still finding himself. And you put him out in a very pressure situation and he just blows it where you could have chipped it out and win the game and, you know, you're up 3-1. So anyways, it's Jim Hiller's fault the series is not over. But the scary thing to me is, Tim, Edmonton's played how many good periods in this series?
Couple? I don't even think it's been a whole period. I think they've played like 15, 16 good minutes. It's crazy.
It's 2-2 now. Like it's just amazing how they can quickly turn a game. And it hasn't been Connor McDavid in my eyes. It's been other guys. Corey Perry's been really good. He's played well. Evan Bouchard stepped up the other night to score some goals. He gets them into overtime. So it's been a little bit of everybody, which you didn't see in the first two games. So all of a sudden, this series that you thought was over, they had the little blip in the third period of the first game, the Edmonton Oilers, and LA was going away in the second game. Now you're giving this team hope, and you're giving them life. And they almost won the Stanley Cup last year, and they're they're very passionate. Connor McDavid's fun to watch when he scores or their team scores. It's just amazing. Corey Perry with that little lacrosse move in front of the net in game.
That was like, awesome.
It was so cool. So if Edmonton does win this series, you have to fire your coach. he's cost you the series. Why the hell would you challenge that goal and give one of the most lethal power plays on the planet an opportunity to win the game when there's, I think, 3 minutes left in the third period? It's just stupid. It's so incredibly dumb. But anyways, that's just me. What is your take on this series? Who's got the momentum now that the home team's won every game?
Yeah, that's part of it, right? So has the series even started yet? We don't know. Although I will say, like you said, it's strange that it's tied. It's crazy that it's tied because Edmonton has not really played well at all. And that's kind of the discourse on Twitter right now, and even in our Slack channel, is just like they do not deserve to be tied in the series. Like maybe 3-1, you give them game two or game three, but it's crazy that we're here. And you mentioned, you know, it's not McDavid. Draisaitl, by the way, I want to say I saw a stat this morning in 22 career games, playoffs against the Kings, he has like 37 points, like something stupid like that. So yeah, he's unstoppable. And like you said, this is not a team, like this is a snowball team. Once they start rolling, they're very, very hard to stop. And I'd hope they don't start to roll because I really wanted the Kings to win this one. But you can't let the obvious chances slip through your fingers. And that's what they did. So they need to tighten things up at home in game five.
I think it's an interesting stat that McDavid does not have a power play point. So all 9 of his points are even strength. So that to me is just bizarre. So if he's doing all this 5-on-5 and he hasn't really picked it up on the power play yet, ooh boy, I'm like, there's a lot of room for the Oilers to grow. And I think the LA Kings have been playing really damn good hockey. Like they're playing as good as they can play and the Oilers are not. So I'm hoping LA takes this series, but the longer it lasts, the more Edmonton's going to fire their legs. And Calvin Picard's been playing okay. He's making the saves he has to make. And that's all you want from a goaltender in Edmonton. All right, last series in the West, Winnipeg-St. Louis. Much like the last series, Tim, the home team's held court the whole time.
This is a fun one. This is and remember, I picked the Blues to win this one, which that was my underdog pick. And so far, and it's crazy because you thought they were kind of out of it. And you think, okay, they're going home. They're a home team type of home team type of team. And maybe you think like they go home and no one expected this kind of domination. I mean, it was absolutely just from start to finish. Winnipeg looked like a different team when they're playing in St. Louis. Combined score of 12-3 across those two games, 14 straight wins for the Blues at home. I'm very excited about it. What did you see from these games?
Well, it's just, I think we all know the reason. It's Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah. Right?
I think the Blues have figured out how to beat him, and it's just to throw traffic in front of him. He doesn't navigate traffic well. And when you have 4 games to figure out a goaltender's tendencies, you learn how to beat this guy. And for whatever reason, and mind you, he sets the bar so high. And so we have such high expectations for this guy where we expect him to be perfect every single game. And everything is magnified in the playoffs. He's been terrible. He's been absolutely atrocious. He got pulled in back-to-back games. He's given up 4 goals or more in 10 of his last 14 games in the playoffs. That ain't good. That's bad. I was calling for his head last year in the playoffs. And I was like, where's Laurent Brossoit? Put him in the net. They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. Now, what do you do this year? The head coach, Jeff Arneil, said we're standing by him. And Hellebuck, you know, good for him. He's standing tall and he's answering questions. He said, quote, am I better? Am I going to be better? Am I going to be better? I've studied goaltending extremely hard. I probably studied in the most out of anyone in the world. So I know what to do and how to get my best game. So that's what I'm looking forward to doing. So I don't know what that means, how to study goaltending. He's just watched goalies play. I don't know, but he thinks highly of himself a little bit, but the guy's just not a gamer, Tim. I don't know what else to say. So if I'm Winnipeg and I'm Scheifele and all these guys up front, I'm like, shoot, he's back. Like you get these doubts. And then when you have those doubts, you change the way you play your game. Instead of being aggressive on the forecheck, you're cheating on the back end a little bit. And then you can't win. All of a sudden, you're just getting inundated with wave after wave of St. Louis attacks because you're scared to be aggressive in the offensive zone or in the neutral zone or even in the D zone, blowing the zone, getting up the ice, trying to make things happen. Has this ever happened where a guy in any sport has just crumbled in the playoffs so dramatically. I know LeBron's had his moments, but he's also had moments of greatness in the playoffs, where Connor, it's been bad for a long time now.
It's really strange. And the quote is weird too. Like I read it multiple times since it was released or yesterday or whatever. It's like, I've studied this extremely hard. I'm going to be better. No one studied it more than me. It sounds really weird. And also, like, you get pulled in game three. Weren't you studying for game four? Like, you get pulled again 2 days later. You know what I mean? So like, now you're going to start studying and get better. Like, I don't really understand. He's kind of dug himself a hole a little bit with that quote. And yeah, like you said, it is the traffic. And he said, like, yeah, you know, we're also capable of stopping it just as much as they are of doing it. So it's going to be a team effort, not just on Hellebuck, but you, like you said, you think, okay, here we go again. 10 out of his last 14 games, like you said, is 4 goals and more. Like, this is, it's so strange. And it doesn't really seem to be a case of like the yips or anything like that. It's just, it's teams figuring him out more than it. I don't know. It's strange. It's really, really strange. And it has to be like, unlike some of the other teams, I think you're scared. The panic is starting to set in already. Even though this is a tied series and you have 2 out of the next 3 games at home, I'm really worried if I'm a Jets fan.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And rightfully so. They're justified to be worried because he has a track record of just blowing it. Unlike Vasilevsky, who's got a couple Stanley Cups under his belt to be like, okay, I know what this guy can do. Hellebuck doesn't have that to fall back on. He has just a track record of failure and choking, much like the Leafs in the first round. That's what we expected of him when we get to the playoffs. And the St. Louis Blues, I think they're showing how good they were. I think last year they set the record for most 20-goal scorers in the league, and this year it was a very balanced lineup, and that's what they're doing in this playoff series. It's not just their first line. It's not just Thomas and Buchnevich and Snuggerard. It's everybody pulling on that rope, and they're all playing great. And don't look now, but the veteran defenseman, Cam Fowler, is leading this team in scoring. He's got 9 points in 4 games. He's playing fantastic. Came out of nowhere playing with Colton Parenko, who's also playing really, really strong, driving the net, playing really solid hockey. So who would have guessed that? Cam Fowler coming in, playing great on the power play, 5 points. It's just, it's remarkable what the St. Louis Blues team is doing. Jordan Binnington playing fantastic. To answer the original question, if I'm nervous, if I'm one team, if I'm Winnipeg, I'm terrified. I'm terrified of what happens next. Game 5 is so incredibly huge, but St. Louis has all the momentum. You think Connor Hellebuck's nervous? That first period, he's going to just be crapping bricks. Check his diaper, baby. It's going to be full. So anything else, Tim, before we move on to a great night of hockey tonight and the next night?
Well, the last thing here is just the Penguins fired their coach.
Yes.
So now we're kind of like, I think there's 8 coaching vacancies right now and 2 more expected to come, or maybe a strong possibility. So we'll have to spend some time either on Thursday or just next week or whatever in the offseason talking about the possibilities there, because there's a lot there. And, you know, the Bruins are among those teams, but I think the Chicago Blackhawks are looking at new coaches and several other teams. So
Rangers and Anaheim Ducks, Seattle Kraken. There's a very large list, Philadelphia Flyers. So what's the most desirable team there? Do you really want to go into a situation like the Rangers where it's just toxic, or the Bruins that are rebuilding, or the Pittsburgh Penguins that has a crazy GM and a bunch of veterans that you're trying to milk the best out of? Or do you go with a younger route? Anaheim, Chicago. That would be fun too.
Yeah.
Right? I know. So there's lots to talk about there. Joel Quenneville, speaking of Chicago, has already been connected to Anaheim. So we could see some coaching hiring soon. But yeah, lots to talk about. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate the support, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. Cheers, everybody.
Spend £200 million. I'm Sorrel, and I'm back for season 2 of the insanely lavish Rich Beyond My Wildest Dreams podcast, where hilarious guests get their hands on an imaginary £200 million jackpot on Euro Millions from the National Lottery.
I would buy tickets to go and see Backstreet Boys in the Sphere. I'd buy the Sphere. What are we talking about?
The bougier, the better.
Turned into a lunatic with all this money. I'm trying to buy Europe. Beach.
So get ready for confetti cannons, champagne, giant checks, and some of the most outrageous ways a person could possibly spend a £200 million fortune.
Jacuzzi karaoke.
Jacuzzi
karaoke.
You can get that Euro Millions feeling every Friday by searching for Rich Beyond My Wildest Dreams on all podcasting apps, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.